We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
What's up, y'all? It's Drewski, and I've teamed up with Mountain Dew to produce a hilarious new basketball podcast called The Dew Zone with Drewski. Learn the backstories of your favorite ballers and celebrities like Jamal Murray.
Did you have like a favorite team? Was it the Raptors at the time or no? Was the Raptors even started around that time?
Come on, bro.
I ain't that old, fam. You're talking like I'm 50.
Taylor Rooks, Asia Wilson, and many more. You won't want to miss this. Listen to The Dew Zone with Drewski on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you listen to podcasts.
In the Know, the Bourbon Street Shots Podcast. We're your hosts, Shamit Duup and Mason Ginsburg, and this is All Pelicans All the Time. Welcome to In the Know. This is our follow-up episode where we answer your questions, try to tackle them the best we can, and we're not going to waste much time with frivolous intros. We're just going to get right into the meat of all these questions that have come through, which are there's actually quite a lot now that I look at it. So thank you for submitting them. Let's get started. And Mason, you want to do the usual where we kind of trade off on stuff, or how do you want to do this?
Yeah, go for it. You have one you want to kick us off with?
Yeah, absolutely. There's a lot of fun questions. Let's start off something lighthearted, and then we'll progress from there. Okay, so the first question is from Aiden Latticky at the Rep Dog. It says, is Hayes the best free throw shooter on the team? Seriously, has he missed since being benched?
I mean, the easy answer is no, but are the not the best free throw shooter on the team. But I mean, like, I actually don't know the answer to. I guess what is his free throw percentage over the last month? I feel like he has made a lot of them
since returning to the rotation. He is 81.7% from the free throw line, which is pretty incredible. That's pretty incredible. 81.7%. That would put him, hold your breath, please, while I find it. That would put him, the Pelicans, okay, so we're not going to count J.J. Redick. We're not going to count Nico Melli. The Pelicans' leading free throw shooter is Brandon Ingram at 87.8%, which is actually an incredible free throw shooting season.
Thomas erasure.
Yeah, Isaiah Thomas. I did not know it was that high. But 87.8 is pretty incredible. I figure just pretty more incredible considering the ones that he's missed late in the game. Wes Amundu is at 82.4%. The sample's pretty small there. Kyra Lewis, 82.2%. And then, you know, Jackson Hayes for the season at 78.2% is right behind Kyra. But, you know, the 81.7% is right there, man. He's turned into quite something.
Yeah. Yeah. That's I didn't even really register me, but I mean, he's ahead of, but by a percentage, but by a fraction of a percentage point, he's ahead of Lonzo Ball, ahead of Josh Hart, Nikhil, and way ahead of Eric Bledsoe, who's down at 69.1%. So
the Bledsoe shooting worse than Zion.
Yeah. Which is ridiculous. Also, I just pull up Bledsoe's page and it's so funny because, like, we were talking in the first offseason about his career 3-point shooting year. Yeah, he's back down to 33.9% from three on the year, which is right in line with his career average. So regression hit hard. But the free throw thing is weird though, because he's 79% career free throw shooter, and now he's 10% below his average this year. It's his worst, besides the second year of his career, it's the worst free throw shooting of Eric Bledsoe's career.
He don't want to be here.
No, not at all. It's the Rams in New Orleans.
What do you got, Mason?
Oh my God. Let's see. All right. We should hit this because we hit this topic at length in the last podcast. And so Iceberg Mail wants to know, Ingram for Ananobi, which side would deserve additional assets?
That's a good question. I think the Pelicans would deserve additional assets based on their reputations as of this moment. I think the Pelicans would be fair to ask for more assets simply because Ingram has been an all-star and has been much more useful offensively. But I have a hot take.
I knew it was coming, which is why I went for it. You would do it straight up.
I would do it straight up. My hot take was I think over the next 3 to 4 years, I would rather have OG than Ingram. I think he's going to be a more impactful player, especially for the Pelicans. That's my hot take.
Do you think BI would be more impactful for Toronto?
I can see it. I can see it because they have, you know, their backcourt, which I don't know if Lowry's returning or not, but Fred VanVleet and Gary Trent Jr., good defensive backcourt. They have their star forward in Pascal. They need to figure out their big situation, which I'm sure they're going to try to, but they don't have that, like, oh, I'm a guy who can make shots from anywhere. And Ingram kind of fits that role. And there's enough, that roster, I think, is set up for Ingram to succeed much better than the Pelicans' current roster. Not that, you know, the Pelicans can't change their roster to make it more Ingram fitting, but I think on that team, Ingram would be the clear number one, which he would also enjoy over Siakam. And I don't see any scenario where Ingram is the number one option on the Pelicans ever. I mean, I guess the scenario is Zion goes down, but you know, I as long as Zion is healthy, this is Zion's team, and Ingram's going to have to fit in around Zion, where he could be the guy, and that may play more to his liking going forward in Toronto. Agree?
I think situationally, yes. I don't know if I'm there with you on. Man, that's tough. They're just so different. They're such different players, and it's crazy because, like, they technically are kind of, they play the same position, but they're so different. Man,
like the team that, like, Ingram needs to have built around to be successful is kind of what Toronto already has there, whereas trying to build a team around Ingram and Zion for me has always been a prohibitively difficult task, and I think OG makes it so much easier for me to take this team into title contention, not because OG is that guy tipping them over, but because I can go get other guys who would be more difficult fits if Ingram was already here.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Cool. Got spicy right off the bat. Right, I guess we're going to keep it on the Ingram trade. There's another question. This is from Abdi the Batosai, at Abdi the Batosai. Would you trade Ingram and a first round pick for Cade Cunningham?
trade Ingram and what? Our first round pick?
Yeah.
Oh, hell yeah.
Yes. I don't think the team that it is has the number one pick would accept that as an answer.
Yeah. Sign, where do I sign?
I don't know. I guess would the war, like, if can the Warriors win? No, they can't win the lottery. Dang. Yeah, if the Warriors are in a position where they could win the lottery, could you see them
doing it? I guess my question would be, is Ingram the best I can get for that? And I don't, my answer would be no. I feel like there's got to be another player somewhere else who fits their team better, who they would.
I don't know. I mean, I think Ingram fits the Warriors because all he has to do is go out there and make shots.
It's a lot of money to pay for some guy to just make shots.
I mean, but he's good at it.
He's very good at it.
He's gonna be even better at it when Steph Curry and Klay Thompson are taking attention off of him. You know, he's just gonna have to. I don't know. I mean, I feel like Ingram would be fine in Golden State.
I think he fits nicely. I just also feel like they need somebody who's. Klay Thompson's coming back from a couple of major injuries. Draymond's a year older. Like, I feel like
Cade also fits very nicely in Golden State.
Yeah, that's fair.
Yeah, tough question. But yes, I think you and I both agree. We trade Ingram in a first round pick for Cade. I don't think there's a situation where the team winning the lottery is open to doing that.
Yeah.
Okay, so here's a question for you. The Wolves win the lottery. Pelicans get the fourth overall pick. Would you trade Ingram and four for one? And I guess whatever. So they would have to send Malik Beasley. Let's say Malik Beasley and Rubio. Let's say the Pelicans, like, we don't want D'Angelo Russell. Fuck D'Angelo Russell. So they have to make salary work somehow. So let's say it's Malik Beasley and Rubio or some shit like that. Malik Beasley, Rubio, Cade Cunningham for Ingram and four.
I mean, if you truly feel like Kay Cunningham's a franchise changing level of talent, I think you still do it. I mean, I really do. I think value wise, it's definitely something. It makes me think twice, but I think if, you know, Cade's that dude, you go get that dude.
Yeah. I would want to know if the Pelicans got four.
Who they're taking.
Not who they're taking. Who else can they go get?
Yeah. With the pick, trading it?
Yeah.
You gotcha. Yep.
Trade like okay, like, all right, like, what if I can't get, like, okay, let's say Cade's on the table, but what if, you know, like, four plus all the other picks, or four plus, you know, some of the young players you have, what's the best player you can go add to Ingram and Zion? Or what's the, you know, what is even Ingram and four, like, can it get you more than Cade? I don't know. I would have to know what else is on the table for me to. I don't think it's a concrete answer for me. I think that one's close.
Got it.
Huh. I think that one's really close. I'm very high on Cade.
Yeah, just like I would go to great lengths to put Zion and Cade Cunningham on a team together. So
you're probably right. I think if push came to shove and, like, you know, I called around teams and this was the last deal on my table, I would probably do it.
Yeah.
I would probably do it.
Yeah.
Okay, cool. I think that's a lot of Ingram talk there. Yeah. What do you got next?
Let's go to Lonzo then. It's not that wild one. So Rube at RJD012 asks, is Lonzo more or less likely to get paid by the Pelicans if we win a top four pick?
I'll answer that question right off the bat. Lonzo is not likely to get paid by the Pelicans. Period.
Well, I knew you were going to say that, but I thought it was an interesting thought exercise to say, like, you know, does it matter? Does it influence anything at all?
No. No.
Fair enough.
Neon signs. No.
All right, then.
I mean, I want to hear, do you believe otherwise? Can you argue the other side if there's any influence?
So, I mean, High level, I agree with you. I don't see a scenario. The scenario is that Lonzo gets an offer way under what we were expecting him to get. That's it. And so if you go there, if you say that Lonzo is actually getting his best offer is at a price tag that is reasonable. Does the Pelicans getting a top four pick change the likelihood that they agree to sign him for that reasonable price? And
I have to say no.
See, I would say yes, ever so slightly. It would because just because you're, I think you become more flexible from a cap perspective as far as the salary you can bring in and stay under it and not be a tax team. But again, this all depends on Lonzo getting something that isn't outrageous in our.
You know what makes you really flexible with regards to tax? Just not bringing not him in. Period.
God damn it, man.
Yeah, I mean, look, like if he's getting a reasonable deal, like the merits of him staying, I think, are completely independent of the Pelicans' draft status. I really do think that because, you know, you have three guys in the top four, I think, that would play guard or guardish positions, but none of them are players that, you know, you can't play Lonzo and them together. And outside of Cade, I would think I would want those guys to have time to grow into it. So like, you know, if you sign Lonzo to a reasonable-ish deal and kept him, I think you can still add those guys to your roster and be fine because you're going to be looking to make other changes, period. But I am also of the belief you're not bringing him back at all, so it doesn't matter. But yeah, I don't think they would influence it. Like, you know, you have Cade, he would start, I think, day one. I think Cade would start day one just because he's the number one pick. He may not close games day one. I think he would start day one. But you could start Cade and Lonzo together, yeah. and that would be fine. And you would bring Kyra and Nikhil off the backcourt, and that's it. I mean, like, you don't need to add any more guards. Suggs, it's possible that he's so good in training camp that he starts together. But if he doesn't, you know, it's Nikhil and Lonzo starting, and Suggs and Kyra are your bench backcourt, which also works. Likewise with Jalen Green. You know, so I think it doesn't matter. I think the draft status doesn't matter.
All right. Well, here's my last hypothetical then. If you found out the Pelicans were getting a top three pick, or so let's call it the third pick. Would you, but in order to get that third pick in the draft, you have to handle the life of Lonzo's next contract with New Orleans.
Wait, what?
You only get the third pick in the draft if Lonzo has his entire next contract played with New Orleans.
Like, you can't move him at all?
You can move him maybe with like a year and a half left.
What's the, like, can I cheat and be like, give him a 1-year deal? Like, what are my stipulations? They have to be a four-year
contract, and you can only move him at, you know, at the trade deadline of the third year.
Yeah, I mean, I would take it. If I'm keeping Lonzo, then my stipulation would be like, I better not be forced to start him, because if I can bring him off the bench and the price is reasonable, sure. But if it's like, oh, you have to pay Lonzo $25 million a year over the next 4 years, and then you get the third pick, hell no. No, I'm sorry. I do not want that.
I was just very curious what your breaking point was.
What my breaking point is, yeah. No.
Exactly. Oh, man. Yeah. Anyway, all right.
That would be like, you know, like someone signing, like let's say like Minnesota won, or they got the third pick, and they were like, we will trade you D'Angelo Russell and the third pick. Fuck, now I sound like an idiot.
No, you don't.
Because I would do that. I would take D'Angelo Russell and the third pick for, you know, like whatever salary. Damn.
Now we understand what our biases are.
I think if Lonzo was on another team and he was on the beginning of a 4-year $100 million contract and they offered you the third pick to take him, would I take him? Oh man, that's tough. I don't love the third guy. If it was number two, I would do it.
But like, also now we're changing the argument. So now what we're saying is that you could very easily, if you're getting that pick, you can still attach a couple other picks to get rid of Lonzo. So that in theory, what you're saying is you're trading a couple picks for that top two pick in the draft, which you would do, right? Like, let's say you had to attach two first rounders to dump the Lonzo contract. Once you got it, you'd do that and take the top two pick, right?
Yeah, I would. Yeah. I would. Yeah. Yes.
Anyway.
Cool. Weird question. went into a weird place, but whatever. Okay. So, good Lord, this can be a two-part question. So the first one's from Ryan Hebert. The question is, yeah, well, we're gonna get into that later. But the first one's from Ryan Hebert. It said, top three trade targets. Go.
Carl Anthony Towns.
Yes.
let's see. OG, because that'll be on there. And then I'm trying to think of dudes who are like on bad or like Dame.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah. I can't go anywhere on my mind went to Indiana next, and I can't go anywhere. I can't make any of those guys a top three trade target. I just can't go that far.
I will choose guys that you didn't pick to make it fair. Because Towns and OG would be on my top three. So in an effort to get diversity, I will include De'Aaron Fox.
Ooh, like it.
I have to include Bradley Beal no matter what.
I figured you were going to go there.
that's a spot no matter what. And the third one's difficult. The third one's difficult. Like, I wish, like, it's easy to be like, oh, like, name, insert all-star here. Like, yeah, like, if Jaylen Brown freaking asks out, like, he would instantly make that list. But I'm trying to be a little bit realistic here. And in terms of realism, I'm split between CJ McCollum and Pascal Siakam. And I think I lean CJ.
So you're taking CJ over, like, any of the guys in Indiana? You're taking him over Brogdon or Sabonis, just to be clear?
Yes.
Interesting. I don't know if I am.
Yeah, dude, Sabonis is weird for me, man. He's, like, really good. I am very intrigued with his fit. I think, you know, if the Pelicans got him, they would be better instantly. I mean, like, without a shred of a doubt. His contract is amazing because he's producing at the value of a max player-ish at a very cheap contract. And so he allows you to be flexible and aggressive when it comes to adding big salaries pieces. There's a lot to like about Sabonis. He's just, I was watching, I've been going through his assists. Like, those things are fucking stat padded. Like, he is dribble handing off to like Doug McDermott, who takes 15 dribbles and goes to the rim and like, oh, that's an assist for Sabonis. Like, there's not a lot of advantage creating going on for Sabonis. It's more like Sabonis is handing the ball to the other guy who scores instead of, oh, Sabonis passed that guy open or created that look for him. There's not a, you know, it's kind of those, like, they're cheap. I don't think they're high value assists.
Yeah, that's funny. Like, I remember the tweet came out when Russell Westbrook set the triple double record or whatever, and the assist that he got to get there was just like total bullshit. It was like the guy made like two moves and then scored, and it's like, how is that an assist?
And you know, his rebounding is really good, which, you know, we've discussed how rebounding can be inflated based off a system as well, and if it's valuable or not. His scoring's good. I mean, he's an all-round good player. Like, I don't want to undersell him as a player.
Yep.
I don't love it. You know, I'm not in love with it, and I think it has to do with I am terrified of how the defense is going to be if three of my front court spots are Brandon Ingram, Zion Williamson, and Sabonis. Sure. Three of them. Yeah. And so... You know, maybe Jackson Hayes can be the Miles Turner of the future, better than Miles Turner. And you're basically, it's a bonus of Miles 2.0. You're starting those two, and then you're just making a big ass team. But I think CJ's a cleaner fit. I would just start CJ at guard, Brandon at the two, Zion at Zion, and then add a forward who can defend More like a, yeah, like a low usage guy. If it has to be Najee, you know, it's Najee, whatever. Yeah. But I think CJ is a cleaner fit.
How much does Jonathan Isaac's injury scare you? Like, would you go after
a lot? A lot. It scares me a lot. Yeah.
Did you think about his name except for that?
I did. Yeah. I did think about it. And I also think the Magic are, I have no interest in trying to move him.
Yeah. Reason. Yeah, that all makes sense. Because his guy, like, what I mean, when you do exercises like this, you go to the bottom of the standings, right? You're probably not going to get a guy other than unique cases where like you just hit your wall, like where maybe Indiana or Portland might be. But you're going to go to the bottom of the standings and see if you got guys who might want out. And so like that's the other guy who jumped off the page for me is
We're driven by the search for better, but when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Is Isaac, but coming off a tough injury.
Oh, here's an underrated one. We've talked about two Toronto guys. The third one we didn't talk about is Fred VanVleet, who I would absolutely love on this team no matter what.
Yeah.
I might want Freddie V over CJ just because of age.
Yep.
Yeah, age, more defensive intensity. Yeah, I'm editing it to Freddie V.
I like that.
I know he's shorter than CJ, but he plays better defense and he's younger and dude's just awesome. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
The economy is made up of real people doing real stuff, and it affects everything. Which you obviously know since you're a real person doing real stuff. Marketplace is here to help you get smart about everything beyond the what of the day's business and economic news. We dig into the how and the why with the real people driving our economy. From big tech and interest rates to small businesses and what's happening at the Fed, Marketplace breaks it all down so you don't have to. Listen to Marketplace wherever you get your podcasts.
Yeah, I'm with you there.
He's cheaper. Okay, cool. So the follow-up is, what are your least favorite trade targets? This is by Corbor. Corey. Oh,
least favorite. So I'm trying to think about players who other like fans or people are saying, oh, it'd be a great fit in New Orleans, and like and ones that I maybe disagree with.
Easy. I have an easy one.
All right, start us off.
Miles Turner. Do not want him.
That's where I was thinking about him. That's where my head was going instantly.
Do not want. No, thank you. Next.
It's tough.
Buddy Hield, number two.
Okay.
Don't like his contract. I don't like his contract combination of his, like, he's.
Oh, I've got one.
He's an incredible shooter. He's legitimately one of, like, the best shooters in history already. He also makes some really boneheaded, dumb plays. Just not a very high IQ player overall. Mm-hmm. And obviously he's not very good on the defensive end, and he's pretty expensive for what he is. If they wanted to compensate me for taking him, sure. If this team, if the Pelicans were like really good already, and you know, they just had this Bledsoe salary piece laying around, and you know, like they just come off of like a second round playoff win or loss, like, okay, fine. You want to add Buddy Hield as your kind of X factor. Sure. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I think he's amongst my least favorite trade targets. And I know Tyler is going to get upset, but whatever, Tyler, cry about it.
Here's a random one, only because he was getting talked about like he's just like the one of the, like, an all-star level basketball player. And I just After he dropped 40 on New Orleans recently, if that tells you who I'm going for here. Terry Rozier.
You don't like that trade? You don't like it? You don't like him as a target?
No. I'm worried about putting too much stock into one season for him. There were the Hornets got mostly just panned for that signing. And now
he's
people
been
are
good though.
He has been. I'm just not ready to buy in at that. I guess I forgot how long his contract is. Is it only 3 years? Because that would make me feel a little different.
It's coming up. I think he's going into his final year.
No. Oh, Jesus. Okay. Well, I may have to rescind that, but like I'm just not buying into the length of the contract helps.
Yeah, he's 21-22 is his final year. So he's expiring next year. And it's only 17.9 mil.
Well, I guess you could go back on.
And Mr. Mason Ginsburg, let me check you here. Last season on 6.7 attempts a game, he shot 40% from three. And so we now have a sample of let me do the math real quick. 1,000
threes. Yeah.
Almost 1,000 threes. 974 threes of him shooting 39.9%. So 40% from three.
I'm still not in. He's going to be getting another contract in his prime. He's 6'1". I'm out. Like I don't see the fit on a team like New Orleans. And I buy the 3-point shooting. It would be unfair of me to say that I don't. But I just don't. There's too much other stuff that doesn't justify what I'm worried that he might make.
Too much other stuff. Okay. All right, man. You've dug yourself in. I'm not going to push further. I don't feel very strong. I think he'd be fine. I think he gets the job done. He can shoot and he can score. Yeah, I think he'd be fine with like Nikhil in the backcourt. Interesting. I forgot about Jeremy Grant. I want to add him to like my list of I would love to trade for. To my top three. I'm struggling to come up with a third guy. I'm like, I don't really want him. It's tough too because beggars can't be choosers and the Pelicans need talent. I think pretty much like any like big man that's like not an all-star, I'll probably be like, I don't want him. But there really aren't that many big men that people are trying to put on the Pelicans.
Kyle Kuzma.
I would be fine with Kuzma. Like, all things considered, I would be fine with Kuzma.
Kuzma for Lonzo, who says no?
That's a great question. I think the Lakers say no. Kuzma might be a better player than Lonzo already. I mean, not already because he's older, but...
Talk about a plot twist, huh?
Plot twist, right. I mean, he's really turned it around defensively. I think that's like the major value. It's like, dude can... He's a player. And so, like, he may not be the most efficient guy, but you don't need him to be your first option or second option at all. Kuzma's fine. And I had one and then I lost it. Damn. I had one and I lost it. That's like the worst feeling when you're like, I got something.
Yeah, you'll remember either the second we stop recording or it's a totally inconvenient time. So
yeah, totally at an inconvenient time. Okay, we can move on. Yeah, their Pelicans need talent, so they can't afford to be too picky on what that talent is.
I've got a good one.
Al Horford is the guy. I'm like, okay, no, I don't want to trade for him. The people try to still put him on the Pelicans. They do.
Brian, we know you're out there. You're still doing it. This is for you. All right, so. Stu Danskin asks, with Bledsoe's minutes off the table, in what combination would you use him between all the young guards?
That's a tough question. Like, I don't know if that means for next year.
Next year,
I guess.
This year.
I guess it means next year because this year.
Well, let's do it. I'm going to interpret the question this way. So let's do it as if the Pelicans are fully healthy, except they don't have Bledsoe. Like, how would you divvy up the minutes for the young guards?
I find that still hard to answer because I don't know what I'm doing with Lonzo here. Like, if he's not on the team, you know, then to me, your guards are Nikhil and Brandon, or I guess Nikhil and Zion, however you want to frame it, whatever. Yeah. but I don't. I'm not running a traditional point. I'm starting in the keel, and Brandon's your offensive guy, and Zion's your offensive engine.
Yeah.
And so you're kind of making plays. Zion's kind of running the show. He's not necessarily bringing the ball up and making every decision. You're splitting that with Nikhil and Brandon. You know, it's kind of an egalitarian offense. But and then Kyra, I would use as a bench spark plug until he shows that he's ready to be a starter and can take on the physicality of being a starter. But I would continue to develop him and expand his offensive role on the bench and run a million pick and rolls with him and whoever the bench big is. If it's Jackson, great, even better, build that chemistry. If it's not, then whoever that bench big is, if it's Billy or whoever, those are the two roles I have in mind next year, barring any like unforeseen like major additions to the backcourt. That way the Pelicans, if Nikhil is starting, Kyra, the bench can be like Kyra, Josh Hart, if they bring him back, Najee, a forward and a big, or, if Josh Hart's not coming back, Didi in that place, but they have guys to fill in that two guard or that second wing spot in the backcourt. So, but Kyra, I would focus on expanding his offensive role and giving him more offensive responsibility next year.
Yeah. I guess it is. It's hard to say. I may have a different answer even in a couple of games from now. If Didi looks like truly just this absolute terror defensively, who's going to give people a hard time every night, I think you have to find some sort of minutes to see if it can keep that up next year. Honestly, I think the biggest uptick would probably be just relative to where they are now and average minutes per game would be Kyra. Other than that, yeah, I see what you're saying. It's kind of a tough question to answer because it's a little ambiguous as to the other parameters, when and who else is on the team or not.
With Bledsoe's minutes off the table, I'm also taking Lonzo's minutes off the table. I've taken a liberty, Stu. Thank you for giving me the privilege. Thanks for answering that question. Oh, I came up with another guy I want to trade for, and that's Bertans. I like an Adams for Bertans trade. Yeah. Trade construction, I think there's something there, but I guess I'm going to keep on coming up with these as the podcast goes on. But I got a question for you, kind of building off of that. How might the close of the season in relation to the young pups change the outlook of the future? Are Nikhil, Jackson, and Kyra now all core pieces or interesting trade chips? How many of the four second round picks do you expect the Pels to keep, if any? Odds of lottery picks sticking. I guess it's like three questions in one. This is my burner account by SR Revolution.
I think the
dude I met at Summer League.
Oh yeah,
that's awesome. Yeah, good dude.
I don't see the Pelicans. I think my consistent answer for second round picks, no matter what the year is I see no more than two being kept in any one year. And of those two, I see no more than one being a player who's on the roster in the very next season, as in the other one could be like a stash like Didi was. So that's kind of my, I feel like regardless of the teams, like where the team is, the only way that would change is if you've got a situation where like a super team where you've got three max dudes and you just need to fill out, you need second rounders to fill out the roster. Other than that, one a year and plus one maybe stashed overseas and that's about it.
I think you can be more aggressive. I think you have two two-way slots and you have like an unlimited amount of G League slots. You don't got to sign these guys to any kind of NBA deal to put them in the G League. You can stash them in the G League. It's going to be in Birmingham starting next year. And the Pelicans have four second round picks coming up. I doubt they're going to draft all four of them, but you could, if you wanted, you could draft two two-way guys, put them on your roster. And then two guys, that are just in the G League or you're stashing. You could do that. Like you have room to kind of just make the G League your farm of players and then see what you got.
So yes, but doesn't that require that other team thinks they're better than G League players?
What do you mean?
Like, are you giving them NBA contracts? And if not, can't they go get an NBA contract from another team?
No, because you have their draft rights.
I'm I'm asking because I genuinely don't know the answer. Like how that
no,
works,
it's the same as stashing someone, you know, like same as like, you know, putting someone in Australia. Like they couldn't have, no one could have went and signed Didi because you have their rights. You have their draft rights.
That whole concept is messing with my head right now. It's like, if I'm a, if I think I'm clearly an NBA player and now I'm just a draft stash that I'm not getting paid an NBA contract, but I can't go prove myself, that kind of sucks.
I mean, you can, like they can, you can allow, like, you know, like you can allow them to sign elsewhere, just not in the NBA.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Cause like teams do that with their first round picks. Like the Spurs drafted Nikola Miltunov, and he's out there in Europe playing center, and yeah, it was the first round pick, and he never came over. And Noah, I mean, teams, you can send something to the Spurs for his rights.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think there's like some sort of statute of limitation, like how long you can kind of leave him out there before things start getting wonky.
Yeah.
But you have their rights until you have them, you know, like that's like we traded the rights. I don't know if we traded them, but like, you know, like the rights of Tony Carr, yeah, we never signed to an NBA contract. He's just kind of out there playing in Italy.
He was terrible. He is now.
Right. You know, like, you just put him in the G League.
Yeah. Yeah.
If they want to be in the G League, or you give them the option, like you can go to Australia, or you can be in the G League. What do you want?
Yeah. So, so what were the players that were mentioned were just
Nikhil, like, Kyra, Jax, mm-hmm. Are they all core pieces or interesting trade chips?
My answer is yes. Yes. I mean, I think if I had to prioritize those players as of after this year, I mean, I think Jax I put a level above the other two. I have a hard time figuring out. I know you love Kyra, so I have a hunch you put him above Nikhil.
I mean, okay. I have him on a similar level. I'm high on both of them, but I think league wide Nikhil would be valued more than Kyra as a trade target.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I also think that maybe he hasn't done quite just because of, I think he got, it just sucks. He got hurt at the exact wrong time. I feel like he was really starting to put things together more consistently because we had this inconsistent Nikhil who would do a lot of great stuff and then kind of not show up. And then he had a string of good games, I think, and then he got hurt. But yeah, I mean, like those guys, the idea is to grow them into core pieces, but in doing so, you make them better trade chips. And so if you can use them to get someone better, absolutely, you should.
Yeah. I agree with you. I think we don't differ too much. I have long said Zion is the single most important guy who is untouchable. Yep. Anything and everyone else should be on the table for the right situation.
Yep. I think we can probably just, I don't know, like maybe one or two more. There was one.
There's a lot of questions. You're gonna leave these guys out. You're gonna leave these guys hanging.
Oh, I guess I need to refresh then. I didn't see as many.
There's a lot of questions, buddy. I think the one that people have been waiting for.
I know where you're going.
Who is the best Ryan on Ryan's Twitter? Trying to start a Ryan war on here. This is by Ty Nola, and this is interesting because there was a guy who called out all of the Ryans and called them dweebs and said that, you know, he would challenge, including, you know, he called me out. He called a couple other people out. He said he'd challenge him to a basketball game for $1,000, but he called out all the Ryans. He said all the Ryans suck. And I might agree with him. All the Ryans suck. Who's the best?
Who's the... No points. The best is Schwan because he doesn't tweet much. And when he does it, they're usually hilarious.
Yeah, it's like a zingers. Yeah, Schwan's OG. We couldn't be in the know without him. So this is a state-sponsored propaganda podcast. And can't go against our sponsors here. Can't go against our founder. So Ryan Schwan, congratulations for winning the Ryan off, the Ryan kerfuffle. I don't know.
I called them the Ryan Britt, and I got mad. People got mad at me.
They should get mad at you. Ryan, did you see Ryan Berger's tweet response to it?
No.
It's the Garfield meme, and he's like, huh, I wonder who that is for. And it's like looking at a picture of Garfield canceled or like no Garfield. But yeah, okay, yeah. Good luck, Ryan's. Next time, maybe you will be more successful. Okay, cool. I think there are definitely a few more questions that we can answer. This one is from Kenny Kleibert at PelFan23. Did the Pels have a justification of raising ticket prices this season after another below average product?
Huh.
What do you think?
Well, there's, man, I don't know how you define justification. I mean, there's the whole argument of supply and demand. And then there's this obvious
moral justification.
And then there's this thing hanging out there, the fact that, you know, we've had the pandemic over the last couple of years. And so what does that do to the marketplace? And I mean, I don't know if justification is the right word. They're free to do what they want, and the market will tell them if they made a mistake or not.
Yeah, I think morally, right? The question is like, do the fans deserve this? No. I'm almost always pro-consumer here. I think, you know, I don't think morally it's a question. I don't think organizations operate morally when it comes to assessing their price for the most point. If they have done the research that states that people are going to buy or continue to buy or happy to be in the stands after a year of not being in sports and they feel like they can get away with it, they're going to try to.
Yep.
If the Pelicans continue to be bad next year, you know, the market, the day-to-day ticket prices, the secondary market are going to reflect that.
Yep.
So it's one of those things. It's like, yeah, like for them, it's probably better to ask for more and adjust later.
Yep.
Rather than just start low. And then all of a sudden this is an amazing team next year. And they could have made more money.
Yep. Yeah. I mean, I don't know. I think I struggle with the term morally here. I don't know. Like, I think it's the right thing to, like, is it the thing that's to the benefit of the fans? No. And I think I kind of agree with you. Like, I would prefer that they didn't do that. I just struggle with it being a moral question here. I don't know.
Yeah, I guess. I mean, I think it's a moral question. I think it's fair to say they haven't put forth the stuff on the court and to justify it. And I think with the pandemic going on and with how the average person has been hit financially, it's not a good look to do so. I think, you know, freezing season ticket prices or freezing prices would have been more consumer friendly. Building rapport with the fan base, I do think that would have been the morally correct thing to do, but I don't think businesses care.
Yeah, that's fair. I can agree with that.
Okay, so next question. I think now we're getting close to wrapping up, but we do have a couple more. This one's from Tibalt or T_TSR. What is the percentage of us trading our pick if it's not the top four? And the second part is who would be the major trade targets, but we've talked about trade targets. Mm-hmm. So what do you think? Do you think, and I'm going to expand this question. I guess I don't have to, cause we already talked about the second round picks, but yeah. What do you think that Griff is bringing in another first round pick rookie?
So I do think so if it's not top four, then I do see it being a part of a trade. I think that is a reasonably likely scenario. Actually, I think that's if they're trying to up level the skill and the talent on the team and win games, you don't need another rookie to do that. And they've got enough picks later on where if they want to invest in youth, they can go that route there. So I do think it's reasonable to expect it's a trade chip.
Yeah, I think if it's not top two, it goes. My question is, what happens if it's not, if they're unable to do it by draft night? Like, what if, you know, it's draft night, and typically that's when Griff's operated, right? So he's gotten the AD deal done before the draft, so you can have a clear picture on what's happening. And then, you know, he kind of swung the fourth pick deal day of the draft. The Jrue Holiday deal was done before the draft. And then during the draft night, they did some shenanigans with the 24th pick and the second round pick. So they've been active there. So my question is, if there's not a deal on the table for a player, you know, an active player, like some of these targets that we've talked about, leading up to the draft and leading up to the pick, does he take a player on the board, or does he try to punt on it in a sense that, like, oh, I'm trading this pick for two future ones, or, you know, something like that?
Yeah.
I mean, what do you think is more likely there? That it's punted to the future, or it's the player is in uniform?
I mean, I think the former, because I think there's a lot of value in this draft. And I think that there, if you can get a couple picks for this one, like two future firsts for this one somehow, I'm in favor of it. And cause you can, I mean, in some cases, you know, drafting a rookie is kind of like buying a car. Like the pick is the pick. It can be anything. And then suddenly once you make the pick, if you're trying to trade it to another team, it's just that player. It can't be anybody else. And so there is that concept too. And so I think that if there's the trade's not on the already like kind of locked in by then, I think Griff will try to push it out if he can, but I don't think he'd do so at the risk of getting lesser value in return. So if he feels like the trade is getting the Pelicans less value than they're sending out, I still think I would think he takes a player.
Okay. Yeah. So what if it's like OKC and they really like someone at the 8 slot or whatever, the 9 slot. And, you know, they're like, okay, we'll give you a future OKC pick and, you know, whatever, top 5 protected. Like that would be an acceptable trade for you.
I think so.
Okay. Yeah, I agree. I think that's the route I would try to take. I was just trying to see like what your parameters are, what your line is. Yeah. But I think that's the route,
like,
I would.
Yeah. So it's kind of ambiguous, but yeah, I mean, like that, generally speaking, that's how I would think about it. Yeah.
Yeah, because if you're going to be aggressive, you're right that having the sheer volume of picks and assets is more useful than having that player's name, right? So if it's like Franz Wagner, if it's like, you know, Moses Moody, those guys might end up being really good. But, you know, come trade deadline and Karl-Anthony Towns is like, hey, I want to be out. Like, is Minnesota like, do I want Moses Moody or do I want two picks? You know, and so like when you want to like go over the top with a trade offer, I think you can wow some people with the sheer volume. And yeah, that is what I would try to do. All right. I don't think there's any more questions that we haven't touched upon already in some way, shape, or fashion in our other questions. Yeah. Do you have any final thoughts you want to add?
No, I don't think so. I think the next time we'll be recording is after the last game of the season. So enjoy the last couple games of the year as much as you can. Maybe the Pelicans wreck the Lakers hopes of avoiding the playing game. You never know. I mean, I think that it seems like that's likely to happen anyway. They're gonna get stuck in the playing game. But maybe the Pelicans can help make it happen and end the season on a fun note for everyone. We'll see.
Yeah. And we're gonna try to do a locker room. We're gonna try to test it out.
Yeah.
And so hopefully we can get you guys to not only tune in but participate, similar like to how we do spaces. Mm-hmm. I think a lot of you guys have been enjoying that. The advantage of locker room here is there's a more seamless recording ability, and we can then just record it and push it out as a podcast to anyone who wasn't able to catch up.
Yep.
and missed out on the good conversation, and if it works well, you know, we can try scheduling more frequent ones, right? Especially around key events like the draft lottery or free agency or, you know, the draft night, things like that. But yeah, so let's let us work on that, try to get you guys involved, and stay tuned.